hiring? Man, finding guest hosts and coming up with scripts for the show and editing the show is exhausting. I need a break. I need a vacation. Wait, what's this TV ad?
Welcome to ClubCon, where all your wildest dreams can come true, and this totally isn't a front for any other sneaky activities. Call now to sign up.
Huh. Definitely nothing going on here, right? What in the... Anthony?
Yeah, ow. You'd think the Autobots would have a teleporter instead of a trebuchet. Anyway, you want to go on vacation?
I do, but I can't swim for nothing, so don't count on me to do any snorkeling. I just want to lay back, relax, and definitely not see any gigantic robots. My nerves have been on edge for months now. If you can guarantee that, I'm definitely in.
Yep. Definitely nothing going on here.
Anthony from TFU Info returns to the show, and we kick off the start of one of the most epic Transformers storylines of all time on this episode of Transformers Chronicles.
The Lockbox Crusade presents Transformers Chronicles.
Hello and welcome back to Transformers Chronicles. I'm Delvin, aka The Dark Web, and in case you're new to the show, welcome, and let me tell you what this thing is all about. We're going for a wild, crazy ride chronicling awesome, wacky, and sometimes corny world of the Marvel Comics, The Transformers, but I will not be going at it alone. Let's see who's on the show tonight. First up, we have the founder of the Longbox Crusade, the novice, relatively so, to the Transformers world, the seeker of the Matrix of Knowledge. His name is Pat Sampson. Pat, what's going on, man?
Hey, Delvin. Not a lot's going on. You know, I just got back, went on a trip overseas, found a nice beach to relax on, got some rays, put my feet in the sand. It was a good time, and it didn't cost me that much.
Why didn't? Is there a catch here? Am I missing something?
I had this really cool boombox that I brought with me, and so people thought it was really cool that I had it with me, and you know, I was just pumping the music. You, me being the DJ, yeah. I was there and providing the entertainment, so I kind of got on for free.
Man, yeah. I should have had a skill like that. You know, years ago when I joined the Air Force, like my granddad, He asked me, did I have a job that was going to have a skill that translated to the outside world? And, you know, I did satellites. Like, did that translate? No. And here you are with the boombox.
I know, the boombox. And, well, you know, it falls into my other thing of, you know, how I'm an entrepreneur. And, you know, Me and Dave, you know, old Ben, we're always looking for new stuff. So I was actually kind of there scoping the island out to kind of take it over. Me and Dave are thinking about making our own resort now. So we would be looking for somebody to be on the staff to help maybe with some bodybuilding, some workout routines for people while they're there.
Okay. So, all right. I can do that. Like, I can just wear a shirt all the time. Yeah. People don't have to see my stomach. Anyway, we're gonna move on to our guest. He has been here before. His name is Anthony Bricale, and he is from TFU.info. We have cribbed his stuff like all the friggin' time to make our show sound more authentic and stuff. Welcome back to the show, Anthony. Thank you so much for being here.
Always happy to be here.
Got anything that you want to tell the listening audience maybe about something that you're doing? Even though we're going to give you a chance at the end, you could always regale us with something now.
Oh, let's see. Well, that I'm doing. No, it's just the podcast Transformers University, where we cover the entire history of a Transformers starting in 1984. And we're into 1988. So we're right around the time before the issue that we're going to cover. So actually, you guys started after me and have already gotten ahead of me with your coverage. So I'm now playing catch up to you.
Man, like sometimes like we've had like some patchy parts as far as like getting out the show. So like I'm kind of like smiling that we were able to pass anybody. So but you know what? I'm glad that this worked out as far as timing, because we reached out for another host and just messaged Anthony. He was like, help, come help us. And he's like, absolutely, I'll save you. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And I kind of tore up my hair a little bit. Like, it was darling. very quickly, I just found out this news before we start recording. I already saw that Anthony tweeted about it. Just want to give a well wish to the family of MD Bright. He did not have a huge role in the Transformers universe per se, but he drew one of the most iconic covers of all time. That'd be the Shockwave cover from Transformers issue 5. And I was first texted or messaged this information by Peter Peltier, one of the fans of the show, and then looked on Twitter X and saw that Anthony messaged it. And also, I think Fabian Izieza messaged it. So I just wanted to give a rest in peace to the Mark Bright's family. So I just wanted to say that if anyone wanted to add anything, now's the time. Pat.
Oh, man, this is news to me. I haven't even checked any social media yet. So my thoughts and prayers go out to his family. That I kind of cover, like you said, when you said that name, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know what cover that is.
Yeah, unforgettable. Yeah. Unforgettable. And Anthony, of course, you.
Yeah, I mean, iconic is probably the best word for that cover. And really for MD Bright's career. I mean, he was co-creator of Icon over at DC Milestone. He was co-creator of Quantum and Woody and with Valiant and Acclaim, which is a fantastic read for the comic book fans out there. Quirky and weird and fun and just all, kind of all over the place. And then, of course, the Transformers number 5 cover with Shockwave, which, you know, is probably arguably most people's favorite cover of the original run and probably of almost any Transformer comic, so much so that it's even being immortalized later this year. They're doing a special release of a comic book version of Shockwave, his current figure, where he'll be in kind of like a halftone coloring or comic book style coloring. And he'll be in a package that features that box, that cover art on the front.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my. What a presentation. And I mean, and what an honor to MD Bright. So I tell you, we just recently said goodbye to Jose Delbo. And it's like, look, I understand. Like, you know, we're middle-aged men. Like, and this is the kind of thing that happens. But I would absolutely be okay if it happened a little bit less, you know. Anyway. The purpose of this podcast will be tackling all of Marvel's Transformers comics in order, starting with issue 1 and working our way to the series end at issue 80. We will answer any questions that are brought up to the best of our ability and see how these books we loved then as a kid hold up to our eyes as an adult now. This podcast is guaranteed to be, you guessed it, more than meets the eye. So Pat, Anthony, let's check out a Decepticon resort that is hiding one or two secrets. I'm kind of understating that. Right after the promo break.
Transformers will return after these messages. It is a world transformed, where things are not what they seem. Transformers!
Want to learn a bit about the Transformers? Think you know everything about Cybertron, but are looking to learn a little bit more? Enroll today at Transformers University Podcast. Each episode will tackle a piece of Transformers history, starting in 1984 and marching our way up to today. Hosted by me, Anthony Brucalli, 3-time Emmy Award winner and consulting producer on Netflix's The Toys That Made Us, and lifelong Transformers fan, we'll go on a journey through cartoons and comics, toys and movies, and all the weird esoterica from around the world, chronicling the adventures of everyone's favorite, Robots in Disguise. Listen to Transformers University on iTunes, Google, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Transform and roll out!
We now return to the Transformers.
Welcome back. The issue we'll be covering today is Transformers issue 47, and here's Anthony with the cover description.
All right, so on the cover, Fort Max is in the cover box doing the head-tearing thing still. Fort Max is colored in red, and the background is highlighted in dark blue. The Transformers logo is orange-lined with black, with More Than Meets the Eye, also in black, running along the top of the cover. The main action on the cover featuring the Seacon Overbite in his shark mode. Jaws, no pun intended, but certainly could be right. Jaws wide open, looking like he's about to chomp down on a lovely young lady who turns out to be Jessie. Remember her from way back? Car Wash of Doom, I believe. This is not a summary. My bad. Anyway, Overbite is about to eat Jessie, who is wearing some snorkeling gear. Overbite's blue matches the dark blue in the Fort Max background. There's a lovely seascape drawn in the background. Diagonally above the outstretched mouth of Overbite at a rakish angle is the caption, Assault of the Savage Seacons. And that's the cover.
Appreciate that. Anthony, you mind telling us what you think about it?
You know, the cover is probably the closest thing you'll get in the original Marvel run to having like a beefcake kind of 80s Marvel cover girl in a bathing suit, you know, swimming out away from Overbite. It's Bob Budiansky art, which is always a solid choice actually for a cover. Bob is just really good at kind of conveying a cover that just, you know, tells you a little bit about what's inside without giving away too much. There's a good amount of detail on it, and yeah, overall, I like it. It's not, I wouldn't put it in my top 10 of Transformers covers, but like it's serviceable. I think that's kind of the best way to put it. It's enough to draw you in. It's probably not terribly memorable, but it is one of the neater covers. And quick trivia tidbit about this one. When this book was published in Marvel UK in the UK, in order to get the text to fit right on the screen on the cover, they flipped it, so it's flipped horizontally. So not only do they drive on the wrong side, but the Seacons swim on the wrong side of the ocean.
That's cool. I appreciate that tidbit as well. I'll go next. I just noticed something. Like, well, first of all, a little bit of me history. Like when I opened it, the bagging board for this cover, I looked and like, this has to be the book that I bought originally, because like it's about to fall apart, like out of the staples. And I saw it, and I was like, oh. So I've had this book for a while, to the point where I might need to buy a new one, because the first thing I noticed is that there's a fold in like the top of the cover. And I'm like, I never would have, I'd be doing that to my comic. That's just abuse. But I give myself,
that's,
you know,
gross, Delvin.
I know, gross. But I wasn't even a teenager then, Pat. So cut me a little bit of slack. Okay, you know, okay. I, in my older age, I know how to take care of stuff now. I've looked at this cover a decent amount, and the picture of Overbite looking like a terrifying shark is so eye-catching. And plus, you know, Jesse is looking to use a old-fashioned word. She's looking very fetching on the cover as well. I didn't even notice that there are three other Seacons that Bob Budiansky drew in this cover off to the right. I was like, I just saw that. Like, oh, look at that. So I'm never disappointed at any Bob Budiansky cover. Again, then I'll just say out loud again, I am amazed that this man never took a run on the book, or never actually drew an issue of Transformers himself, because the man clearly can draw some Transformers. Anthony, were you going to add anything to that? Okay, just making sure. Pat, what do you think?
That was something I was going to mention. The other Seacons on the side there, I thought was really cool, really small detailed. But what I like about it, they're just not kind of faded in there. They are colored decently enough where it's not just one color. They're two shaded colors in there, and they kind of stand out a little bit. But the detail in the jaws, you see all the kind of mechanical gears and things like that in here. It's like, wow. You know, Jarrett would say this would be a inker's nightmare, because you have to do all those mechanic straight lines, you know, just chain lines and all that to make it look good. So you know, hats off to Budiansky and the inker on this. The detail of the underwater seascape that's happening as well too just pulls you in. I like how Jesse's, you know, bubbles of breath, they're going up and they go over the Transformers logo. So you kind of, you know, see that kind of hiding the logo, not a lot, just because they're little bubbles, but still, I like that when they kind of break that wall. Mm-hmm. With the logo, and they can do stuff like that. And then, as you called it out, the rakish angle of the letter of the comments that say Assault of the Savage Seacons, that really kind of stands out too. This reminds me like one of those early 60s, maybe 70s, kind of like the horror beach kind of.
I see where you're going.
You know, still like that, like the sea monster kind of a thing. I like it. I like what they're doing here. Really cool.
Yeah, I just like there are some times where you see Transformers and it's like, yep, you know, big robot. I do understand how that would be scary. But in this case, like, I mean, a robotic shark like that, that actually looks like terrifying. Like that could be freaking nightmare fuel. I've always been impressed with how Bob draws and the attention to detail that he puts in. So we can rate this thing here on Transformers Chronicles. We rate things on a scale of 1 to 10, just like the tech specs of old, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. So let's talk about it. Pat, what would you rate Transformers 47, the cover?
This one, I am going to give an 8. I like it. It reminds me of that nostalgic feel for those, you know, kind of horror-y movies. To me, I think it would stick out. Now that I've read it, I think it is one that kind of stick in my mind as, oh, I know what happens in that issue now, just from this cover.
And for me, I'm at an 8 too. I agree mostly with Anthony in that I could probably think of several covers, especially like if you had all 80 issues of Transformers of the original run laid out before you, like, would this one be up there? Yes. Would it be top 10? Maybe. Do I think it's memorable? Absolutely. That plus Bob's attention to detail on how he draws the robots and took the time and drew the seascape and everything, like that's more than enough for me to justify an 8. And so I had to hesitate on that because I was thinking maybe not, but it's very good. What do you think, Anthony?
I would probably go, you know, I was thinking 7 and then listening to you guys, you know, it's probably an 8 for me. You know, if you take the whole original run, it's probably in the top 20 of covers. So that would put it somewhere at about an 8. I think there's a big bonus for me in that I like when a cover tells you a little bit about what's in the book. Mm-hmm. I tend to give lower scores to covers that are completely unrelated to the what's in the comic. On the flip side of this, though, even though there are Transformers on the cover, there's nothing in robot mode, which kind of keeps it right around an 8. Like it's probably like a 7.9. Like it's just hovering at an 8 for me. And then one little note here, Pat, you mentioned the inker on this cover. The inker on this cover was Kevin Nolan, who inked for a bunch of Marvel stuff and penciled Moon Knight and Doctor Strange. Interesting note about this is that this is the only time he's ever did any work for Transformers from this time or after. He's never done anything since. So this cover clearly scared him off.
Maybe. Yeah. It's like, I have spent 14 days inking this cover. I'm never doing this again. I'm glad that you mentioned that, though, Anthony, because looking at the credits that Pat's about to be reading, I saw the name Nolan. You can see it on the cover as well. It says Budiansky and Nolan, but on Mike's Amazing World, which me and nearly everyone else who does podcasts gets information from, cover credits just went to Bob Budiansky. And I'm like, no, there's clearly a Nolan here, and I didn't know who it was. So thank you for that tidbit.
Absolutely.
And Pat's going to regale us with the rest of the cover credit info.
All right. Well, thank you, Delvin. And here we go. We are going to be looking at Transformers issue number 47. Its on sale date was August 23rd, 1988. Cover date, though, was December 1988. Cover price was $1. Story goes to Bob Budiansky. Pencils is Jose Delbo. Inks, David Hunt. Colors, Nelson Yantov. Letters, Bill Oakley. Editor is Don Daly. And the cover credits, as we mentioned before, were Bob Budiansky and Nolan. And all that's thanks to Mike's Amazing World and TFWiki.net. Back to you, Delvin.
Hey, Pat.
Yeah?
How glad are you that you don't have to say Bulinati this month?
It is a world transformed where things are not what they seem. It is the world of the Transformers. The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. Transformers. Robots in disguise. The Transformers from Marvel Comics.
The title of this issue was Club Con. Oh my. We start with a newly repaired Starscream descending on some humans and the battle is on. Oh wait, no, nope. We're looking at a commercial. A commercial? Yeah, for some island resort called Club Con. Club Con? Well, yeah. Looks like the Decepticons have taken their island fortress and turned it into a resort, and well, the Autobots are surprised too and send Blaster to investigate, which would seem to be prudent to not only see what the Decepticons are up to, but also because the king of this island is the still-kidnapped Buster Witwicky. Clearly, Blaster can't go alone, but he can transform into a radio, and while Optimus Prime had the plan to have Buster's dad, Sparkplug, take Blaster on the island to do some recon, it made more sense for a younger person to do the job, and so the lovely Jessie takes his place. While snorkeling, Jessie runs across a lot of stuff. The Seacons looking for something, a secret entrance into the island base. She goes back and grabs Blaster, and once inside the island base, she finds Buster. And boy, Buster has a story to tell about why the Decepticons are parked where they are. They're looking for information in the form of two Autobot tapes that foretell the secret of an ancient source of power that is heading towards planet Earth and has been heading that way for a very long time. Ominous. Well, the Seacons found those tapes. Jessie stole those tapes. The Seacon raid the island and Blaster runs interference, but is forced to spit the tapes back into the ocean to keep Seacons from threatening the humans on the island. Blaster reverts back to radio mode to avoid detection, and Jessie and he leave the island unscathed. But this adventure? It's just beginning. Boy, is it. So let's talk about the book. We talk about highs, we talk about lows, and the discussion forms forthwith. Anthony, how about you start us off, man?
Oh, man. There's a lot to unpack here. I got to say, the plot, the Club Con as a sovereign nation and as a business venture, both seem to be on very, very shaky ground as a concept.
Very. Almost Fire Island-ish.
Yeah. And so I had a little bit of a hard time buying, even knowing, you know, how ridiculous Transformers can get. Even this one, you know, Car Wash of Doom gets a lot of flack, but this is a pretty tough scheme to get behind.
I would agree with that. I would second that one.
I was willing to buy it given the premise, especially like you and I, Anthony, know what's coming up, especially at issue 50. And so I think if anything, Bob was doing a going from the ridiculous to the sublime thing, because I mean, it ended. And that ending. We're going to have to get back to you in 3 or 4 months, Pat, to see what you think about the ending. But I can understand how ridiculous it would be that the Decepticons basically came up with the idea of an island resort to distract from their grander scheme. But I kind of like it because it came across as silly.
Yeah.
Like just absolutely silly. But there was something very, very sinister underneath. But well, Pat, go ahead and take it.
What was silly about it is like they're not hiding it. And they're not hiding who they are anymore. You know, it's like, wait a minute. You know, I guess now they're just making the old commercials so they can bring people to the island. And I'm like, whoa, Starscream, what is he doing? And so I was invested in this crazy thing. And I think what helps is that, like you said, the buildup of all the other kind of crazy stuff that we've seen already happen, the wackiness that we've had. And so I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go with it on this one. It makes sense of what was going on. And so I thought it was a pretty decent scheme. I feel like this is and obviously it seems like it is after the last few issues we've had. When I saw the cover, I was like, are we in for another filler, another, you know, crazy thing? And then I started reading like one of, you know, part one of, you know, this, I'm like, ooh, okay. Okay, so what's going to go on here? And then I saw Starscream back, and I'm like, oh, you know, you got me now. Mm-hmm. Is this really true that he's there? And then you know, I don't want to pick everything in one spot. So, yeah, I think this pulled me in, even though the wackiness of it, I was prepared for it, and it just kept going and giving on this one.
You do remember that Starscream, like way back in issue 19, Omega Supreme wrecked him. Mm-hmm. And they had him in cold storage at the Ark. Then Grimlock took the Ark to the moon and evacuated the Ark to have his big Mortal Kombat against Blaster. The Decepticons raided and got all of those Decepticons that were in cold storage back, and it looks like Ratbat repaired them all to include Starscream.
Mm-hmm.
So
who now Starscream owes a debt to him for repairing him, it seems, right? Somewhat. You know, he ain't gonna, you know, but he's fine this time.
So what do you know about Starscream, Pat? Pop quiz.
I know he is a jet.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to think he's a leader and wants to take it over.
Mm-hmm.
He was voiced by the same guy that played Cobra Commander. you know, I think he's a schemer. You know, he's always looking, you know, for himself, I guess. He's like the total opposite of a Grimlock.
What do you mean?
Grimlock's just more abrasive and just rough and out there, where Starscream, he's conniving and
gotcha. Yeah, I agree. Especially early Grimlock, there was nothing subtle about him. Like there was a line from, I think it was the movie Serenity. Like, I don't know if you guys are big Firefly fans or not, but like Mal was the leader, and Jane was always like the malcontent, like nipping at his heels from one way to the other. And then like they're having an argument over something, and like and Mal just like, what, do you want to just take over something? And Jane was like, yeah. And then Mal was like, well, you can't. So yeah, like that's more Grimlock, but Starscream is more, oh no, you're the leader.
Yep.
Until I find you weak, and then I'll kill you.
What'd you say?
I said you're the leader. Like, okay, I was just interested to see what you remember at Starscream, and since I'm guiding the discussion somewhat, they kind of hint to that a little bit, right?
Like, they do, yeah.
Anthony, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time in the comic, especially with Starscream being in storage for so long, that you actually get a bit of his personality. I mean, a lot of people's perception of him is formed from the cartoon, but in the comic, you know, even in that first 19 issues, he isn't much of a factor. On the cartoon and in those first two seasons, I always joke that he is the best Autobot, because he is the one who foils all the plans. so he's the one that he will just ultimately screw it up for everyone else. Here we're starting to see a little bit of that, and you don't really see that in the U.S. run of the comic of Starscream kind of being that person of that that politician almost who's trying to find his way to power, you know. And Delvin, to your point before, you know, I forgot this is the first part of the Underbase story, so this is I'm with you on the idea that this is kind of a soft sell into a much harder story as we go on.
Yeah, like Bob's pretty good at that. To where, like, he'll start with something that is either A, seemingly innocuous, or B, completely ridiculous. You're like, what? Where is he going with this? And then by the end, you're like, oh my goodness. You know, I actually just saw something recently. You know, this is like, I was able to read some recent comic books. Very happy to do that, because the Lord knows, like, I had like a year and a half worth of Batman. And Batman just did something... Zdarsky just did something very similar with Batman, to where Batman seemingly killed the Penguin. And because he did that, it unknowingly activated this failsafe, like the villains literally called failsafe, that was sent to take Batman out because Batman had seemingly gone too far. It was Batman's plan to ruin Batman. Now, obviously, this isn't a Batman podcast. I'm just only bringing it up to say that, like, I like that idea sometimes something just seemingly innocuous just uncovers something that is just absolutely terrifying. And I'm not really letting a cat out the bag to say that that's going to happen here in Transformers, but what's going to happen and how it's going to happen, that remains to be revealed. Anthony, what do you have next?
Let's talk a bit about the Seacons, I think. You know, it's their first appearance in the U.S. book. Something neat that I just covered on my podcast was that the Seacons appear in the Marvel UK book about six stories before this, when this story shows up. So, you know, I don't know if you've ever talked much about Marvel UK on here. So
off and on. Like,
so I'll get the quick gist of it is that Marvel UK ran weekly. So what they do is they would split the US stories into two issues, and then they would have to fill two other issues and do that for the year. So they would essentially write a whole other year worth of comics that would have to fit in between the U.S. stories in some way. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, what is pretty rare for the UK run. The Seacons show up before in another story that takes place in the ocean, and very briefly, but they show up, and oddly enough, in this story and in that story, Overbite is like the first one that shows up, only he's called Jawbreaker because that was like a working name apparently for the toy before they finalized names. And then actually the UK story actually has to go back and backtrack that they already appeared in the story. So the cover, I think, for this one in the UK version says the return of the Seacons. The Seacons are back is what it says, which is completely different than what ours says. But it was neat seeing them, though we didn't really get to see, some of their bigger powers and their bigger effects that they have as a team.
I wish that we could have gotten to see Piranacon. Like to see Jose Delbo draw that would have been incredible. But, Pat, what did you think about the Seacons as a whole? Did you like them? Did you not like them? Or are you just like, oh, my God, robots?
Yeah. I am kind of... when we get more robots and all that, I kind of get roboted out. But I think with this one, I was interested. So I guess I didn't know if they did become a bigger thing, a combiner or whatever. Do they make something bigger? It sounds like they do. So that makes it more interesting. And I think I like that it's the theme of sea creatures, that kind of thing is different than the other stuff that we've seen before. So I like that. I'm really interested to see what they look like when they're in a big full mold.
I mean, it certainly makes sense that if they're going to be on a planet that's 75-80% mm-hmm. water, that maybe they come up with some robots that could adapt to the sea. Unfortunately, Pat, we are not going to see Piranacon in the rest of the book. So
will we see, I guess my question is too, will there be more of them maybe in the next issue, or do we see them continue to see them down the road? Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't remember them being in it beyond this. You could see them in the UK book. And it's neat and sad too, because the Piranacon as a concept, as a combiner, was a slight departure from what we're used to of having that the main body and five limbs.
Don't give away too much, Anthony. I got a Transformer spotlight to read.
All right. I'll hold on to it.
Okay. I didn't go that far down in the script.
But I will tell you, a Seacon appeared in the film The Disaster Artist, with the story about The Room, with James Franco and oh God, who else was in it? But in The Disaster Artist, there's a scene with where the it's Tommy Wiseau, being Tommy Wiseau, and he gets in the car. Someone gets in the car, and there's a Seacon toy on the dashboard, and he's like, "Don't look at robot." He says, "Don't look at Robot Crab. He's shy."
That's random. That's crazy. So we talked a little bit about Starscream, talked about the Seacons. There's a few other things to talk about. Like, it's interesting because I think this one ran a little bit short. I didn't count the pages, but I could tell they put a little bit of filler at the end. I don't know whether or not in the Marvel Unlimited version that they included those extra pages, but in the original comic book, they did about three or four tech specs for comic for some of the Headmaster Transformers, which immediately in my adult mind said, okay, they're doing this because the story was short. They wanted to shorten the story. But was I correct on that, or was this a full-length story?
No, so the story is shorter, but they actually shortened the story to include what they call the Transformers Universe profiles. Yep. So those profiles, there's actually a 4-issue miniseries that came out prior to that. I don't know if you guys covered that one, but these are the add-ons to that. So they, instead of doing another a miniseries run or an additional book, this is the first time it appears in the main book, and they will happen throughout up almost till issue 80. I think 78 or 77 might be the last ones, but they'll be one or two every issue or every other issue from here on out.
Pat, did you get to read those? Did you get to see that?
I did see them, yeah, but I guess I didn't read them. I just kind of looked at the names of them.
Pat,
but they look pretty cool.
How dare you, Pat? I didn't read them either. I didn't read them either. I'm going to be honest.
The one thing I was looking at when I read through, I'm like, oh, you know, they got their abilities, but they don't have the
specs.
The specs, and I'm like, oh, these would be cool things for, you know, spec talk and all that. But so far, they didn't.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I do think that that's kind of cool, like as opposed to just extending the story, just to extend it, just to do a little bit of basically add-ons to what Anthony was referring to, Pat, is they called it Transformers Universe. And there were four issues that came out, and every Autobot, every Decepticon, they put it in put them in alphabetical order. And while it didn't have the tech specs on it, like it had kind of like the read through, just like you saw for these Transformers, like they'd have a really cool drawing of it. They even included some of the characters from the Transformers, the movie. So as a kid, like it was awesome to have that. Like, you know, it was basically the Transformers Bible in a sense.
Yeah, basically from the G.I. Joe universe, it's the Order of Battles. They did the same thing with G.I. Joe where they just did, I think it was a 4-issue run to miniseries where it was each page was a character, had the background in it.
How dare you? G.I. Joe, who cares?
I'm in both universes, so I got my...
You are. You have toes in both universes. I want to talk about Blaster. I was kind of glad that, like, Bob did kind of a... He did a very cool thing to start the book. After introducing Starscream and, like, the off-kilter thing of Club Con, when they went to the Autobots looking at this commercial, they show three of, like, the biggest Transformers that have been in the book so far: Optimus Prime, Fortress Maximus, and Grimlock, all kind of just sitting there chilling out. And then they cut like to the action scene and they immediately cut to who? Blaster. And it's like, oh, so like it was just kind of cool that like the four main characters or four of the biggest Autobots that they have shown in the Transformers universe so far all made an appearance in this book. I thought that was cool. Did you like how Blaster operated in the book, Pat?
I did. I thought once they did that and then show Blaster, I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to their man of action or robot of action, which is Blaster. And, you know, we've gotten to see what kind of guy he is over some of the older issues that we covered. So I was like, okay, oh, cool. Let's see what Blaster's going to do here now that he's got the okay or the approval from, you know, Prime and Fortress Max and Grimlock. And I thought it was cool to see those three kind of just chilling too. You know, it's like three brothers sitting around and they're like, okay, you got Prime who's the older guy, you know, and then you got Fort Max and then Grimlock who's just like the, you know, the younger brother that just wants to have fun and do some things.
Yeah, he saw it. He's like, oh, that's a good place to visit. But then it was like, I get to smash the Decepticon. Yeah. Smash, smash. Like, so, yeah. Anthony, what do you think?
You know, I think, you know, Blaster in the Marvel run is just awesome. He is one of the best characters in this whole series and consistently always has really good stories and really good roles to play in these stories. I think, you know, you watch him, he takes a pretty harsh shot to the back from the Seacons in the story right before spitting out the cassettes into the ocean, which I thought was a little odd that, you know, Blaster as the the boombox is ejecting the tapes via his mouth instead of his, you know, cassette door, which is a terrible marketing when you're trying to sell a toy that does the same thing.
I agree. Totally.
But you know, a Blaster, you know, he's great as he always is. I mean, I wish there was more I could say. I thought it was weird that he kept calling Jesse's soft skin, which seemed odd. I don't feel like he had that vocal tick prior when dealing with humans, and it almost seemed like disdainful, where I didn't feel like he was written that way before.
I agree. I think maybe he was just like, I don't know, maybe he didn't care too much for Jesse in that, like, what made me laugh about Jesse is like Jesse just straight up lied. she lied to Sparkplug and she lied to Blaster. She's like, okay, I'm gonna go snorkeling. Okay, I'm gonna go past like the safety guidelines. Okay, I'm gonna invade this Decepticon base. Like, that's not lying low. That's not laying low at all, Jesse. What the heck, girl? Like, but I mean, good on her, because I mean, she absolutely helped uncover the plot, but she did not listen to anything that she was told. So, like, that was, I found that funny.
I like it that, you know, obviously she is more grown up person now. You know, she is not the little girl or the teenage girl that we found in the beginning. Time has definitely passed with her and with Buster. So I thought that was kind of cool to see, you know, her get a little more role, you know, a little more action scenes of her own than we have in the past.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I am always a fan of women in comic books with agency. We're getting past that point, but I'm never been a fan of the damsel in distress. It's like, save me. No, heck no, girl, be about that action. And she was. She absolutely was about that action. And like, and where even Blaster, who we've already mentioned, is kind of like the bot of action. Like, he was like, no, we're going to be cautious. And she's like, no, screw this. I see the tapes. I'm still in the tapes. And she took the tapes and just ran with them. Like, I give her credit for being a woman of action.
You know, I can see how Blaster is treating her, because he doesn't really know her, right? We know her, and some of the other, like Prime knows her, and some of the other Autobots that we've seen, but Blaster's never really had an interaction with her. So he's kind of coming at her new. So, you know, he hasn't really friended her, but I think at the end of this, he did. You know, he's like, well, you know, you really handled this very well. So, and you got us what we somewhat needed, I guess, kind of kicking it over to that sense with the tapes. And now that he says he knows something. So I don't know if he played it back when he was eating it or whatever, and now he's in his head or something.
Eating it. That's funny.
I don't know.
That is just a hilarious artistic choice. Like, I don't know whether or not, like, I'm betting that Bob's direction to Jose was like, he ejects the tapes.
Spits out the tapes.
Yeah.
And yeah, he spits out the tapes, and like, and he, and Jose was just like, okay. Oh man.
Well, you know, with the little knowledge of Transformer knowledge that I understand, is when they are small, they micronize or whatever, and then he gets bigger, but the tapes still probably stay the same or whatever, and so he somehow indigests them or something.
I would have thought it would have been a good opportunity for him to, like, you know, press the button on his shoulder, whatever, yeah, and then just like quickly eject him into the ocean. That would have been a bit of a better look. In any case, does anyone else have anything? Did I miss any major plot points? Anthony, help me out.
No major plot points. I've got a couple of small trivia bits here just for you. The anchor on this issue, Dave Hunt, notable for being the anchor on Punisher's first appearance in Spider-Man. Interesting, weird art thing here in that Run Amok is in the Club Con commercial, which seems a little odd because, you know, the human saw him spray painting the Statue of Liberty. So I don't know if he's your best salesperson. He's also in the training room with Blaster when he's training with the Autobots. So he's misdrawn in there as being part of the
Autobots. I was like, did the Autobots have a version of those Battle Charger dudes?
I think Delbo was trying to draw a Throttlebot and just kind of drew the same thing. And then with Yamtov's coloring and just kind of washing it out, it's just all run amok on both sides.
He drew a great Mirage though.
Yeah. Yep.
And yeah, who's the brown guy? I know him, but I cannot remember his name.
Outback makes his second and final appearance in the comic.
He's a Throttlebot.
No. So Outback is he's just one of the mini bots. Like, he's essentially Brawn, but with a different face. And so, and an Australian accent in the cartoon. And he shows up for just this issue. Yes.
You know, that Australian Cybertronian. Pat, I'm sorry I cut you off, man. What were you going to say?
Oh, well, you were just talking about the artwork in it. And, man, the interiors on this with Jose Delbo, man, really good.
Yeah, I am And I think the show is a fan of his. Like, I mean, really good stuff. Like, even just seeing Mirage just for a quick second, I was like, dang, that's a really good Mirage. I wish that he had more opportunity to draw Mirage in the book.
And props to Jose Delbo for this, in that, you know, there are 37 characters in here, and that's three humans and 34 various robots in different, character models he had to draw throughout this book.
It kind of shows you how sometimes they give him an issue off or whatever. And it's probably like, yeah, go soak your hand in some Epsom salts, man. We're going to hire a massage therapist to massage your hand, because that's a whole heck of a lot of robots. Good grief. But props to Mr. Delbo for doing that, because it was brilliant work. Pat, did you have any additional notes before we moved on?
No, just I'm interested to see where this is all going, what Rat Bat has. And, you know, obviously this is some sort of a Rat Bat plan that's going on here. I think, you know, seeing him again, and, you know, he's always scheming too. So I want to see where things are going.
Well, remember, they very quick. I love Bob for this, like just little subtleties where he tells Starscream, I am Commander Rat Bat, and don't you forget it. You know, like, I don't know if a bat can roll his neck like I'm rolling on that. You know, that's the attitude that he had. Don't you forget it. I am Commander. So, yes, this is a Commander Rat Bat operation that is going on right now. And you would think that it maybe have something to do with fuel or something, but we don't know yet. Looks like the answer to whatever is going to be coming is something that has been in the works for millions of years at this point, and is B, heading towards Earth, and C, the information that the Autobots were going to send to Optimus Prime and the rest of the Autobots were found on those two cassette tapes, of the information of which has yet to be revealed.
Do those cassette tapes transform too?
They do transform. I don't know if we see them transform in the book or not. But, I mean, they do transform. Blaster had his own set of tapes. The crazy thing about that is, they were never showcased like Soundwave's tapes were. Like, Soundwave, I could rattle off the top of my head, Rat Bat, Laserbeak, Buzzsaw, Rumble, Frenzy. Those are all his tapes. And he had a couple other, like, dinosaur ones, too. Like, but Blaster's tapes, like, they never really talked about them too much. I'm sure Anthony's got that. I got something to say.
I could get into it. But, yeah, in the cartoon, they showed up a handful of times. And, you know, they're part of the third season. They show up a little bit in the movie very briefly. And then they're peppered throughout the third season, but they're not a big factor like Blaster's, like Soundwave's tapes are. And Soundwave's tapes show up throughout season three also. These two particular tapes, Rain Dance and Grand Slam, they're interesting in that they're the final two tapes on the Autobot side for 1988 and for the original run. You won't see them transform in the comic. They only have one more appearance, and they're still in cassette mode when you see them. But the toys themselves are notable for two reasons. One, neither one of them has a robot mode. They both turn into vehicles, but they do combine into a larger robot, the two of them, and they form a robot called Slam Dance. And so that is where they what becomes of them as far as the actual physical toys. But you won't see that in the Marvel run.
Interesting.
Very interesting. And thanks for that, Anthony. Incredible information, man. We are going to transition now to talk about who had the touch. Where we talk about which character in the book stood out the most, be it Autobot, Decepticon, or human. Pat, who do you think had the touch?
Boy, this one's a hard. I'm tossed between two, and I'm just going to go right off the top of my head. You mentioned it. It's Jessie. I think she had, you know, the woman of action in this one. I think, if she didn't do what she did, there really wouldn't be much to this issue, or wouldn't really be much to the story, because they probably never would have got the tapes, or, you know, at least figured out there's something not right with that Club Con going on here.
And I like that she did something that was just, you talk about very common sense to a human being, maybe not to a robot. Like, I'm assuming like they sort of roamed the base and was like, okay, this has to be where Buster is. And Blaster was like, why? It's like, it's the only human sized door. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That's bloody brilliant, to be honest with you. Anthony, who had the touch to you?
Oh, I had this. I wrote this. This is like one of the first things I wrote down. It is Jessie, and it's for all those reasons you guys cited. But for my particular taste, it's because she had the touch because she talked Sparkplug out of getting a free vacation and giving it to her. He's like, yeah, I'll go. And she's like, no, hold on, hold on. I could go.
And not only that, she nagged him too. It's like, yeah, I think this island's for people who aren't, how do I say this nicely, freaking old and decrepit. Like, hey, oh, I said it nicely. Like, no, you didn't. You just prefaced it nicely. Yeah, she did. She talked her way into a vacation and she got some snorkeling. She got some thrills with the robots. She got to hang out with a robot. So, yeah, I'm with y'all. We'll go 3 for 3. I agree. Like, Jessie was the person who advanced the action. If it were not for Jessie, it is very unlikely Blaster would have found Buster. To be fair to Blaster, like, even when he, like, dropped onto Sparkplug Witwicky's doorstep, like, he was like, okay, we're going to recon the island. We like to use you because you're human. And, oh, yeah, we might be able to find your son. He never promised it, to be fair to Blaster. Yeah. Yeah. And then just very, very quickly, as another plot point that I wanted to mention and a kind of another nod to Bob Budiansky, is Sparkplug said nearly the identical thing to Blaster that he said to the last robots that came to his door. Last robots came to the door. It's like, piss off. Like, get out of here. I want nothing to do with you. And in this case, he's like, I already said I don't want anything to do with you guys, but I shake the hands with the devil himself to get my son back. And I'm like, that's good characterization, and that's very good continuity by Bob. So just a quick nod of the cap, Bob. And we talked about who had the touch. Someone had to be out of touch. We talked about the character that was the worst in the book and should be spat out into the ocean when the guy who spit you out literally has a tape deck and you're literally two tapes. In the segment called Less Than Meets the Eye, we go back to Pat, tells us who's less than meets the eye. And just real quick, I promise you I had written that already before we talked about it during the main discussion. I'd already had that written. Pat, you're up, man. Who was less than meets the eye?
Yeah, boy, another tough one. I will have to choose Starscream because I know there's something going on there. So he's kind of less than meets the eye as far as what he's playing, is my call on this one.
What? Starscream? Scheming? No.
No way. No.
Anthony, who's less than meets the eye to you?
This is going to sound like I'm contradicting what I said earlier, but I'm going to go less than meets the eye with Blaster, not for his heroics on the beach, but for showing up to Sparkplug's house in an Easter egg. I don't know if you noticed that, but it's really like a cheap plastic egg that he shows up in, and I'm like, you got to come in with some style. You've got a ship full of robots that turn into things. Can we come in, get dropped off a little nicer instead of this cheap egg?
What do you mean? It's an egg that transformed into two half eggs.
It's one of those Kinder.
Yes, it's a big old Kinder egg. That's what it was. Man, I don't really have anybody for less than meets the eye. Like, so far in issue 47, I think everybody did what they were supposed to do. The C-Cons were supposed to find the tapes. They found the tapes. Ratbat's supposed to lead his team to do some nefarious game. He did so. Optimus Prime put his best warrior into a recon mission, and he did admirably on that. I think if I had to pick somebody, it would be Blaster, only because I thought he was being overly cautious. If you look at it, if Jessie wouldn't have advanced the action, I don't know how Blaster ever would have been able to really find out anything stuck in radio mode. He needed Jessie to do something, and he seemed to be stuck on just, like either jokingly or derisively calling her soft skin all the time, as opposed to maybe just putting her into action. And as she turned out, she was a completely capable person. So I think Blaster will be my less than meets the eye for that. Let's talk about rating the book, though. 1 to 10, y'all know the deal now. What are you going to rate Transformers Chronicles? I'll go first. I like this book. It was good. And even to that very good point, I know that, like, since I know the foreshadow, like, I can pick up on a few things, and it kind of made me smile and nod my head a little bit. Even if I can't quite remember, like, I remember vaguely 48 and vaguely 49. I definitely remember 50. And so, like, I'm interested to see what's coming up. And I think that this was an excellent place setter. So I give it an 8. I'm going to pass it to Anthony. Anthony, what would you rate Transformers 47?
I would say the story, it's a little, like I said earlier on, I think the premise is a little thin. There's some continuity issues also with the flashback and the premise of the tapes being sent to Earth when they didn't actually know if the Autobots were here things happened a few hundred years before they're woken up. And I attribute some of that to just Buster Witwicky's recollection of it. Like, that's his mental picture of what's going on. But I would say, you know, the story, it's good, but it's a little bit flat in that it's really well self-contained, but I don't remember how it fits into the larger whole. And I don't know if that's kind of shading my opinion on. So I would say it's a 7, with where I will reserve the right to promote it to an 8, after issue 50.
Gotcha. Pat, what would you rate it?
Well, I think I am with you at an 8. I understand what Anthony's coming from, you know, but having read the issues we've had to read before this was a real welcome to read, knowing that it was actually going somewhere and it was setting up something. I didn't really realize that until once we started getting into it, because I'm like, oh man, here's another odd cover, or just something different going on. So let's get through it. But it really surprised me. So that's why I'm raising it up to an 8 from just being a 7 for me. And really interested to see more.
We have finished part 1 of 4 of the Underbase saga. So, like, by the way, they never said the word Underbase. What the heck is that?
Well, they show does it have to do anything with, you know, their base, and it goes under the sea, and then it's connected to the, still looks like it's kind of into the bedding, right, of the sea. So are they going to try to do something with, you know, getting to the planet core and doing, I don't know. That's my thought. Maybe.
And it's okay to have thoughts. Like, and you know what? I'm not even going to tell you if you're right or wrong.
Like, yeah, I figure you
are. It's called intrigue, we'll see. Pat. We'll see. I'm just gonna leave that there, give you some intrigue, and let you have a little bit of mystery as to what the heck's going on with Transformers 48 that we're gonna be talking about next month. So heck yeah, we'll leave it there for now. And we can and never will leave you without John's segment of the show called Transformers Spotlight, where normally he discusses a particular Transformer, which was featured in today's issue. But it's still my turn to read it until John comes back. So while he wasn't in the book, we're going to talk about Piranha Khan. The function of Piranha Khan is undersea warrior, and his slogan is, "Underwater, no one can hear you scream." When it comes to combiners, most suffer from the same problem, an inability to agree on anything while in their super robot form, resulting in limited intelligence and limited effectiveness. Such is not the case with Piranha Khan. The Seacons, who comprise Piranha Khan, can all agree on one thing. They love to hunt. In fact, they love it so much that once they combine, they absolutely will not stop until they've either run out of energy or are destroyed. This has gotten to be such a problem that their commander, Snaptrap, has been forced to activate an automatic timer upon combination, forcing Piranha Khan to dissemble after a period of time. Despite this one setback, Megatron considers Piranha Khan an ideal warrior and wishes he had more Decepticons like him. Piranha Khan is usually the combined form of Nautilator as the firearm, Overbite as the right arm, Seawing as the left arm, Scalor as the right leg, Snaptrap as the torso, and Tentakill as the left leg. All of the Seacons, save for Snaptrap, have a Target Master mode that can be used by Piranacon himself. Overbite was intended to be the Combiner's main weapon, but Nautilator's incompetence resulted in the formation mentioned above. Piranacon was released in the fifth year of Hasbro U.S. Transformers toy line, and it's the fourth year in Europe. Strength is a 9, Intelligence 7, Speed 4, Endurance 6, Rank 7, Courage 9, Firepower 10, and Skill is 6. Thank you to both TFWiki.net and TFU Info for all of the information that I cribbed above. And with that, we will go to a promo break.
The Transformers will return after these messages.
WhenItWasCool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.
We now return to the Transformers.
Now is the time for Transmissions, where we heap praise upon the audience for listening to us. We are going to talk about Transformers Chronicles episode 44, where, of course, we discuss Transformers issue 44. And thank you to the shares and retweets from both Scotty Cameron and Serpy Matt. Now we're going to talk about comments, because we always seem to get a decent amount of comments. The people who comment, y'all need to be liking and sharing and retweeting as well, so you can let everybody else know about this podcast too. But that said, thank you very much for the comments. We love reading them. And I'll start with Scotty Cameron, who says, "Man, Optimus isn't having a good day. Liked starting the episode by discussing Transformers by DWJ because that run is great. I hope by now you've read Duke and Cobra Commander and saw the secret in Cobra Commander number one. I hope to see Rom in Image's Energon universe." Real quick, Scotty. It's not going to come out for a few months, but you might want to listen to Crusademus this year, episode 4, because Ryan Daly brought along a comic book in the Energon universe, which I will not reveal because, heck, we want you to listen to that episode. So I know a little bit about it. And yeah, I am enjoying the heck out of the Transformers Energon universe, Ron. Anthony, have you read any of that?
I've been keeping up with all of it, and it's good. It's a great take. It's very competent comic book storytelling. I don't know if it's necessarily for me, because some of it is hyper violent, but it is really good overall.
It's like, I'm normally not necessarily a fan of hyper violence here or there or whatever, but I'm like, oh my God, the volume is turned up to 10. Like, Daniel Warren Johnson, and I even included it too. I was like, Daniel Warren Johnson has lost his damn mind. And I'm like, I mean it, like, he is, volume's up to 10, pedal is absolutely to the metal there. I've been impressed so far. And the Energon universe overall, whew, really good. Anyway, do you want to read the next comment, please, Anthony?
Yeah, let me just pull it up right here. From Rod Lynch, that's a pretty cool cover. Sadly, I missed that issue the first time around.
Pat, go for it.
I'll take the next one from Matt Passo, and he says, "Great episode for another Doctor Who reference. It would have been hilarious if Optimus told Skylinks that they couldn't save him. The Skylinks Carnival Act is a fixed point in time."
I got it somewhat. I don't know much about Doctor Who, but I kind of get that. Anthony, you're a Doctor Who person by any chance?
Never seen it once.
you and me both. Like, all right, so I don't feel too bad about it. I've never seen a single episode of Doctor Who, but I sort of get it that, like, it's time travel. So he's just saying that it would be funny if Optimus had told Skylinks he can't save him because the whole thing is a fixed point in time, so it can't do anything to change it. That's funny.
I'll read the next one, because it's actually Jonathan responding back to him, who probably got what Matt was saying in his response back to Matt. He says, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Autobots. Let's roll out.
Next comment is from Christopher Willett, who says, that was a wild cover. Can't wait to be reminded what the story was. Hopefully you enjoyed the story, and you could always let us know about that. Give us a call. Like, I would love to be flooded one time with a bunch of comments and phone calls about Transformers Chronicles, to be honest with you. Anthony, your turn.
Sure. Matt Poiso, once again, I am left with one thought. I wish you knew where the Rocket Cycle Racer came from.
So John very cleverly did a Transformers spotlight on Rigel the Rocket Racer. Excuse me, Rorza the Rocket Racer from Rigel 3. There we go. And I said that without even looking it up, like, because he said it so many times during that that synopsis. It was funny. Let's see. Oh, Pat, your turn.
I'll take the next one from our friend Herbert Fung. And Herbert says, while I know I read it back in the day, this just didn't stick in my memory. But I didn't do the Seymour. But I agree with your review. This issue was kind of fun. And Herbert also did his own rendition with his toys, figures, and recreating the cover for issue 44.
Yep, there is. My boy even has a trapeze guy. So I'm assuming that that's not Rorza. Rorza is on the cycle, and he actually has a Rorza. And I believe we deleted or forgot to include the rest of your comment, Herbert. You explained what it was, like what you did for Rorza. He has a trapeze set up, and he has Skylink sitting on top of like the original Optimus Prime. Like, it is a wonder to see.
And he's got the Protectobot Groove as the motorcycle.
There you go. I appreciate that, Anthony. And Pat, do you post this stuff on longboxcrusade.com?
Still? Yes, there is a post there.
Oh, like, do you post like Herbert for Herbert stuff by any chance?
No, I don't. Okay. But I could add it.
Might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, but, you I know, could add it to the when this issue comes out. Yeah,
yeah. That's only if you feel
if
like.
Got to remind me.
Yeah, like, and I'll make sure to do that. Let's see. Oh, it would be my turn. Brent Barnhart says, "Can't forget Daisy. You absolutely cannot. She's the teddy bear, you know."
And then my turn here. The Aaron Henley. Wait, did they use Spinosaurus because they lost the Godzilla license? Did we miss out on a Godzilla versus Transformers battle? I just made myself sad.
I think that a Transformers versus Godzilla comic book would be pretty dope.
Yeah.
I'm not even like the hugest like classic movie monster guy per se, but I'd be interested in that. Like, it would be a crazy fun movie even, but like, that seems like a movie that's so crazy and fun that like no movie producer would like put the $100 million they need to make it like the mega blowout that it needs to, because they'd be afraid that it'd bomb, but it would still be fun. I would watch it. I mean, heck, they made Pacific Rim, and yeah. Like, I jokingly used to call a Pacific Rim fake Transformers. So like, if they made Pacific Rim, then maybe they could make a Godzilla versus Transformers.
And you know, I think it'd be a good fun summer movie, you know, just fun popcorn, go out and watch it in the summertime.
Yeah. And you know, Transformers crosses over with everything now. There's all sorts of collaborations, and this is not an official Transformer. I do want to show you something, since I know it's an audio podcast, but this is a knockoff that came out in the 90s called Godzilla Bot, I think, and it's Grimlock. It's the Grimlock toy, but it's as a Godzilla.
That's cool. And I'm just gonna go ahead and say, like we podcast with Anthony before, but like, I don't know whether or not you're in a different room.
I was. This is before I moved. I moved since the last time we talked.
So. See, there it is, because like, he comes on camera, y'all, and again, as y'all know, this is an audio podcast, and behind him is like all the Transformers. Like, name a Transformer, bro's got it, and it is freaking impressive. Like, I'm looking, and I'm trying to figure out like where Anthony lives, and like, and can I come visit him? And then like, I'll see him, and like, you know, Hug's like, "Yeah, dude, good to see you. Get out of my way and take me to the room." I'm just gonna be in the room, like, reliving like the most awesome childhood ever for like the next few hours.
Delvin, you're welcome to come over anytime.
Dude, I appreciate that. That is awesome for you to even say. And like, yeah, like I just wish y'all could see this because it is the most impressive display of Transformers I have ever seen. Fantastic.
I was just going to say it is. And that's one of the coolest thing is just to meet other fans and see their love for it. And, you know, as we talk to everybody else, going back to Joe, I know it's the Transformers, but man, you know, seeing someone's love of Joe and their collection behind them and just, it's awesome and so cool to see.
Yep, there's that part of it. And then what I also add is, Anthony? Of course he does. And I just wanted to say, like, I mean, it is one of the greatest byproducts that I never would have even considered when we start podcasting. Like, you echo out, like, you know, some of your love, like, because, like, I had a love for the initial run of Transformers. And then what do you get back from the universe? People who also share that same love. And so you find out that you have something in common with those people. And that's awesome. I love just the simple fact that there are things that connect us far more than there are that repel us. We've done it with Robin Hood. We've done it with Flash Gordon. And we've done it with Sherlock Holmes. Like, we podcast about James Bond over in the White Rocket network. And like every time that we just put something out like that in the universe, that we even get like, you know, 2, 3, 10 people back. That's like, man, I love this stuff too, man. And I love like listening to you guys. Like, it warms our heart sincerely. And just that is something that will make you come on and record. Like I'm sure I've said it any number of times. Like, I usually record at 10 o'clock at night. And I'm coming after jujitsu, which is not a easy martial art on your body or your mind. And so, like, that makes you want to just come and sit in front of the mic. One, you get to talk to friends, which is always awesome. But two, like, that there are people you know who are listening to it and appreciate it. Like, that is absolutely heart and soul affirming. All of that said, one more comment from Scotty Cameron from Spotify, because we have some Spotify listeners. Pat, you want to read that, please?
Sure. Scotty says on the Spotify, and you too, if you're listening on Spotify, go ahead and make a comment just like Scotty does. We really, really appreciate it. And Scotty says, great episode. Love the cover ratings and the opening talk about the Image/Skybound Transformers run. I like hearing Bob Budiansky praise for how he writes humans and kids in particular.
Scotty, man, we appreciate you. Thank you for writing a comment, usually on our Facebook page and going to Spotify and doing that. Thanks a lot, man. We do appreciate that. And to anyone else, if we missed you by any chance, we apologize. Just let us know, ping us, like Longbox Crusade on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we'll correct it the next issue. And everybody, that is the show. Please come back and join us for the next episode where we discuss Transformers issue 48, where we see part 2 of the Underbase saga, where Optimus Prime battles Megatron? What? Megatron? He's dead, right?
I think so.
He's back in POG form.
In any event, if you'd like to hear more from us, Longbox Crusade, y'all, you know where to find us. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Longbox Crusade. We have a Patreon that you can join for only $1 a month. If you go to patreon.com, look for Longbox Crusade, you'll find us and you'll get access to a whole bunch of cool stuff. We'd love to have you. Please subscribe to us on YouTube and like our stuff. We'd appreciate it. We have some live content as well. We do it live stream once a month, every second Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Come out to play a new Warriors podcast that I host. That's every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. And we drop podcast content all the time on YouTube, usually twice a week. So we love for you to like, subscribe, come check us out. We even have a voicemail, and you can call us and leave voicemail comments about this show or any other show. I love to get this thing flooded one time, like 10 minutes of comments. That would make my day. 707-532-5269. That is 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone.
You heard Pat saying, pick up the phone. Make that call. You can email us too. Contact at longboxcrusade.com. We read emails too, y'all. You hear me. I read reasonably good. So I love to read a comment if you decide to just email us one day. Anthony, dude, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for all the knowledge that you dropped on the show. Like, you were a plus 10 to the show, not just a plus one. We greatly appreciate it. Please take this time to tell us about where you can be found out on the internet.
Sure. So first, I just want to say I love being on the show. Happy to do it anytime we can make the schedules work. Love hopping on this one. It's so much fun talking with you guys. And I would say that if you liked all the odd Transformers tidbits and information, weird factoids, then check out my podcast, Transformers University. We do a history of the Transformers brand starting in 1984, coming all the way through, hopefully eventually today, if I can get on a much more regular schedule with it. We are into 1988. We cover everything, the cartoons, the comics. We'll have, let's see, we're at episode 142 or 43 by the time this episode drops. Oh, cool. We'll be talking, actually, Marvel UK, first appearance of Piranacon in the latest episode, and then follow that up with a thing we like to do called By the Numbers, where I go through all the tech specs for a year of toys, this one, 1988, and go and break down who has the highest strength, who has the lowest strength, and where they fit within the Autobot and Decepticon hierarchy, and who has some fun and quirky functions and personality traits and all sorts of things like that. So that's the podcast. We break down everything pretty tight. Also, the website, www.tfu.info, the world's longest running transforming toy archive. And you can find me on social media at TFU_info on Twitter, or TFU info just about everywhere else that you might check out Long Box Crusade, including Patreon and YouTube. And that's where you can get to me.
Yeah, Anthony has been invaluable to this show one way or the other. We have taken a lot of information from his stuff. Like, I don't have the Transformers knowledge that he does or that John has, who's normally on the show. And like, I know John pulls information from a lot of different places. I have almost exclusively gone to like tfwiki.net or tfuinfo and pulled information just so we can continue that segment of the show. So like, man, we are eternally grateful to you. So thank you so much, Anthony. I personally can be found on Twitter at DEE_REY1977 and Delvin Ray, if you want to look me up on Instagram. See y'all next time. And remember, freedom is the right of all sentient beings till all are one.
Till all are one.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah.
All songs, song clips, and characters discussed are copyright of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended, and it is for entertainment purposes only. We are just fans that like to share our love of comics.